Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man.
Today we're going over time management, and more specifically, time management for people that travel, or the digital nomad community, which has become a popular phenomenon. Digital nomad is basically just the idea that you can go to a cheap country like Thailand, sit on a beach, work from your computer, and make shitloads of money traveling the world and being a boss. That's kind of a great idea in theory. Sometimes in execution it's not so easy, but we'll go into that as well. So we're going to be talking about a bunch of different subjects on the call, not just time management for those people, but time management in general, how to best utilize your time, how to focus better, how to get in the zone. And let's start there. The first one that I want to talk about is multitasking. I think I'm terrible at multitasking, and I also think everyone is shit at multitasking because it's bullshit. I don't think anyone can effectively multitask because if you have a brain like mine, you can't think about two things at the same time. If I tell you to think about a pink elephant, you can't also be thinking about a green snake unless you picture the pink elephant and the green snake fighting. But now that's a whole different conversation. So it's very important, especially in this day and age where everyone is vying for your attention, that if you want to get anything done and if you want to get something done effectively, get in the zone, you need uninterrupted periods of work. There's a great book called Deep Work that I have in my backpack that I haven't started reading yet because I've been too fucking distracted. No, I just haven't got around to it. But everyone says it's a great book. And I think a lot of the ideas and the concepts all feature around the same thing, which is if you're going to do something, turn off all your distractions. That can be very difficult, especially with smartphones and all the notifications we have from the hundreds of apps on our phone, people texting you, calling you, people honking at you on the road. There's a million ways where people are trying to get our attention, people advertising to us. There's, you know, it never ends. So in order to be effective, you want to find a quiet place where people can't distract you. You want to silence your phone, turn off all the notifications, put it on sleep mode, whatever you have to do. And studies show that it takes about 15 minutes to get into that zone where your brain is fully functional, focusing on the task at hand, especially if you're writing or trying to code or doing math problems, whatever it is that you are doing, you need that uninterrupted time. And, you know, our attention is our most valuable resource. We get to say yes or no to people trying to get our attention all the time. So that's the first thing is, especially if you're traveling around, or you're working for yourself and, you know, time is something that you have to manage. You don't have a 9-to-5 job. You don't have to be there at any specific time. It's so important to get that uninterrupted experience and find a good place to do that. You know, Starbucks can be great for many reasons. They have a bathroom, they got internet, but there's also potential for a lot of distractions there. And you know yourself the best. You might need, you know, like a bunker if you really want to, you know, get yourself in a non-distractable location. So, you know, don't be that asshole who needs to check their phone between sets of the gym. I promise if you can't go more than 30 minutes without checking your phone, it's not your job, it's you. It can always wait. So there's no excuse you can give me for that. Also, find the times when you're the most productive. For me, it's early in the morning. If I had my way, which I usually do, I could wake up, check my phone, you know, the second I roll over from bed, and I could jam tasks for 4 hours straight. Respond to emails, answer texts, calls. And after that, I usually get hungry. I want to work out. A lot of the time I'll go and I'll play hockey from like noon to 2. And then maybe I'll want a little nap after lunch. And then I find that I'm productive later in the afternoon between like 6 and 9 p.m. After that, typically I want to go out and socialize, do something other than work. And the most important thing, if you have a lot of time and people know you have time, is you need to learn to say no to things. Most people tend to say yes to everything because they don't want to look like a bad guy. But in reality, it's a lot easier to say yes and then blow someone off than it is to say no and look like a dick. But the best negotiators, deal makers in the world, they understand the power of no. A no is usually the first step to getting a yes. So don't feel bad when someone invites you to something and you say no, or they want you to do something and you say no. If they're a good negotiator, if they know how to make things happen, they'll find a way to get you to do it anyways. So there's a ton of power in no. When I have travel, I enjoy nightlife, so I try to schedule things around the things I enjoy. And a lot of the time, I know I'm going to be moving from place to place. So I'll work while at the airports during flights. I'll try to maximize my travel time so I'm not just sitting there on a bus getting nothing done and staring into space with no Wi-Fi. Credit card comes in, credit card hacking. When you have good credit, you have so many perks and benefits that come with that. There's a site that you guys all know about. It's called The Points Guy. You can go on The Points Guy, find out the really awesome credit card deals that are being offered. The Chase Sapphire Reserve, when you sign up for that card, you get I think it's called Priority Pass, where you get access to almost every airline lounge that an airport offers. They have free food in there, free Wi-Fi. You don't have to worry about being bothered by any people taking your order because you just go and you get the food yourself, free drinks. And I get tons of work done in those airport lounges. The other day, I was flying from San Diego up to L.A. just to attend a Seder. And I figured I could either drive or I could jump on a 30-minute flight and have like 6 hours to work in the airline lounge instead of being sitting behind a car. So behind the wheel of a car, and I fly virtually for free because my girlfriend's a flight attendant. So I was able to spend my time in that airline lounge and I got a shitload of work done, no interruptions. And another thing that's really important about traveling is you don't want to move around all the time. And I know I'm a huge offender of this, but there's a reason. Now, if you're moving from place to place every 2 or 3 days, then you really don't have a lot of time for anything except traveling and maybe some fun. But if you do plan to live the digital nomad life, it's so much better to stay in a place for at least 10 days, ideally a month or 2 months, and you really learn the lay of the land, you learn where to go, you meet some awesome people, you get to set up shop, and you get to have some form of a routine. Because, you know, we're really creatures of habit, and you're going to be way more successful if you create these healthy routines and you make them habits. It takes 30 days, according to experts, to create a habit. And if you're traveling to an area for the first time and you're trying to get the lay of the land, like I was last month in Southeast Asia, then, you know, cool, bounce around to a few different places. I think I did 7 or 8 countries in like 25 days, and I was only in each place for, you know, 3 to 5 days. A week at the longest, but now when I go back, I'll know exactly where to go, how long to spend there, and I'll set up shop, just like I did in Eastern Europe, where I was trying to discover where the best places were to go. And then when I went back, you know, I spent a month and a half in Ukraine, I spent a ton of time in Serbia, a ton of time in Budapest, because I know those were the spots. And while you're traveling and you're trying to optimize your time, always make time for the unexpected. You know, there's this bullshit ideal of the digital nomad, which is, you know, he sells all his worldly possessions in the U.S., he moves to Bali, he gets an Airbnb, he wakes up, he has a power smoothie, he spends 22 minutes doing high-intensity interval training, he showers, shits, shaves, gets ready in 24 minutes, then he spends 6 hours coding on the beach in his hammock, then he checks his Apple Watch, and it goes off. He's got a healthy lunch, gets a massage, spends another 4 hours coding. Then he has an awesome dinner for like $2, goes on a date, bangs a local 10, kicks her out of his bed, and then he's asleep by 11 p.m. Rinse and repeat every day. That doesn't fucking happen. You get it out of your head. You have to be super flexible when traveling. And this idea of like the digital nomad who's got all this shit down is just, that's retarded. That's the idea that they paint a picture for in the 4-hour work week and stuff like that, but that just, it just doesn't happen. You meet people, you go on adventures, you move cities, you lose Wi-Fi, your bag gets stolen, you have to get a new computer, you sign up for a health and wellness retreat for a month in Phuket, then you go here, then you go there. It's just, it's, you have to plan for the unexpected. So those are my kind of tips and tricks of the trade. I'd love to hear from some of you guys who have a lot of experience, or just any experience at all, or any questions you guys have. Cam, can you share your experience of, you know, your last, it's almost been like a year being a digital nomad in Budapest, right?
Yeah, totally. Almost 1 year now. So the whole idea of the digital nomad, where like people, as you touch base on, like where people don't seem to stay anywhere that long. My biggest frustration is like I see a lot of those people as transients coming through like Budapest, and like they never get a chance to like learn really anything about the culture or the language or any like nice spots or anything that aren't like just tourist traps. And so I think a lot of those people really miss out on the opportunity to really like experience the place for what it is. Like, I think to like really, really experience some place, like you got to be there for a minute. Like, I remember the first time I moved to LA, it was in like, even after a year, I still didn't know shit. And, you know, I've been here for almost a year, and I'm still like seeing new parts of like Hungary every day, like learning new places, and mingling a lot with a lot of the local people here too.
Yeah, for sure. You know, when I was traveling for the first time, mainly around Eastern Europe, it took me at least 10 days to really kind of get the lay of the land. And when you meet people and you start to infiltrate their social networks, you know, you're not really doing yourself any favors by leaving after a week. You know, you want to stick around and really get to know the city, put some roots in the ground, and then anytime you come back, I mean, you're good to go. And if you can, sometimes it only takes one person. Like, for example, Eddie in Belgrade. You know, I was in Belgrade for a week, and I was able to meet Eddie and build that friendship with him. And now every time I go back, you know, he's the mayor, and he rolls out the red carpet. And I know I've got you in Budapest, so anytime I go there, like, I don't even have to think about it. Just Cam's going to have it covered. So, spend some time. What was the transition like from having to, you know, like, show up to an office to basically being, you know, in a foreign country, not speaking the language? I know you still have to, you know, technically be on call from those hours, but, you know, you have a lot more autonomy, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think, like, the transition, it was quite different. I mean, at times it was even difficult because at least in LA, like, you know, I knew a lot of people there, and like, also everything's in English too. And like, everyone's like extremely friendly. So it wasn't like too difficult to like find my way around and stuff out. Like being here in Hungary, like for the first like 2-3 months, like it was really quite like nerve wracking to figure out like where I'm going to go to, like gym I'm going to go to, like, you know, where I want to live, like what part of town is good, like where the best places to go out and stuff. And like, it's been a slow process, but you know, now that I've been here, approaching a year, I think it's been like maybe almost 9 months now. I can say with confidence some of the best nightlife spots, like some of the best place in the game, like some of the best restaurants, you know. And, it's definitely an experience, but, I think the best part of it, or the best way to adapt to such a thing, is to be open-minded.
Right. Okay. And what about time management? What have you found to be effective and ineffective for you in regards to that?
So that's definitely something I'm struggling with, because I do have a weird schedule where I'm kind of on call in the evening, or until 11 p.m. or midnight some nights. And so I have to like really buckle down and stick to a schedule. So things have been helping me is like really sticking to my schedule. Like, you know, I have this time set aside, so I know like I can party and like I'm not going to have any eruptions. I have this time set aside where I can work on my, like, you know, my regular job in the U.S. I have this time set aside where I'm going to study the local language the same time every day. I'm going to be a creature of habit at like Monday and Wednesday at this gym at this time. I'm going to go work out to make sure I get my workout. Like to really adjust and get into the flow of things, I've been up to a tight schedule.
And what's the biggest challenge you've been facing?
As far as scheduling is concerned, I would say really just making sure I have enough time to fit in everything that I want to fit in.
And is there something that's like getting in the way? Are you procrastinating or anything?
Yeah. So something, I haven't been doing and been, procrastinating a lot on is, cooking for myself. Also, I mean, you know, at with the exchange rate, things are so inexpensive here. It's like super easy. I can eat almost every meal out and I can almost eat every meal out and still be fairly healthy, but I've definitely been procrastinating on cooking. Also, up until recently have been, haven't been putting a whole lot of time into getting as much reading done as I want to do. So like in the past week, I've been actually trying to make more of an effort to like sit down and like make sure like I'm reading and make sure I'm reading these books that I want to get finished.
So here's a great tip that I learned from James Sisson. When I visited him in Brazil, he's originally from New York. He moved down to Brazil to be a teacher there and take advantage of the amazing exchange rate, see the world. He had a maid who would come in every week and cook him like his week's worth of meals, do his laundry and clean up the house. And it's so fucking cheap in Brazil and same with Budapest. I don't see any reason why you couldn't do that too, Cam.
Yeah, totally. That is actually something I did start to do a little bit, but then I ended up adjusting my schedule and the lady I had cleaning for me and doing all this stuff for me, it was kind of going against her schedule. It's something for me to consider and get back into.
Yeah, I mean, you have her come beginning of the week and you have her do the grocery shopping. Tell her exactly what you want. She comes back, she cooks it all, cleans your house, does your laundry, and you're good. Right, that whole fucking thing would probably cost you $50, and it would be an amazing value for her too.
Because yeah, probably even less here.
And she can meal prep for you. She can put all your food in Tupperware, and you'd be good to go. You wouldn't have to spend a minute on meals the rest of the week. That would save you, God knows how much time. You know, probably 3 hours a day, 21 hours a week. That's like an entire day.
Yeah, I definitely need to put that in place. That's time lost for sure.
Yeah, if it takes you 20 hours to find the lady, who cares? You know, you'll get that back in the first week. So, you know, somewhere like New York or LA, that's going to cost a lot more. It's probably still worth it. Like, I'm thinking about it. I'm like, fuck, I should be doing that. But, you know, then again, I like to cook my meals and eat with my girlfriend, and she likes to cook. So there's also that time. That's, you know, that's valuable time that's also fun and engaging and a way to connect. But if you're single and, you know, trying to be the optimized digital nomad, that's the way to go. Yeah, you shouldn't be cooking unless you really love to cook, and then whatever, you can cook a few meals or cook on dates, but you should have a cook coming in and doing that for you in these inexpensive places to live. Anything else, Cam, that you wanted to share?
I think that's, you know, for the digital nomad culture, it seems like I said, these guys are usually always transient and are never really like that long in a place. Something I noticed, like when I see a lot of these guys, and then also like when I traveled, guys that, Patrick and I both know, through like the digital nomad circle here in Budapest and like Ukraine, A lot of these guys, is when it comes to dating, it seems like a lot of these guys are really lacking that build, and they're not really doing any day game or like meeting girls out and social events. It's all online dating, you know? And I think, that's something that people really forget to do when they're trying to do this digital nomad thing. They stick to these online dating apps and ultimately probably never really even meet local girls. They just meet other travelers and stuff. I think, when you go to a different place, like, you have to actually experience the culture, get out there and like meet people. Fuck the online shit.
Exactly. I hate online game. Fuck online. Go out and day game. Meet some locals. Go out at night. The options are infinitely better. So good call there. Thanks, Cam. Oh, how about Joselito? Joselito is a seasoned nomad. Fuck, how long have you been traveling for, Joselito? Like years, right?
Yeah, I think it's like 3 years. 3 years and a half, although before that I was traveling pretty much every week, although that was, you know, kind of different mode. But yeah, around 3 years or so.
And how come you were traveling? You know, I know what you do, but explain that.
So I'm a technology consultant, and at the beginning I used to work on very large projects somewhere in the U.S., So the dynamic was that I would work at the project side around 5 days and then be back for the weekend. So I transitioned into a different role that I only had to be 1 week in Atlanta, and the rest I could do whatever. So that kind of started my journey into the digital nomad thing. So that was cool because I was able to work from home. I shaved off quite a bit of time and commute, and you know, traveling every week, that's almost like 6-7 hours in bullshit commute Monday at 5 a.m right? So, and then going to Atlanta 1 week a month was actually cool because I need to be in front of people. So that was like a super sweet spot for me. I know others that only do remote, and they get a little bit crazy in the sense that they actually need to go, even though they don't have to. They actually will go to co-working spaces, and I've actually met those guys. And they are very pushy at lunchtime to try to make sure they connect with people. Otherwise, they go nuts.
For sure. I remember when I was in Ukraine for about a month and a half, you know, I would go nuts too if I tried to work alone in my apartment. And I found WeWork type of places where you can go and just get a desk and pay a small amount to work there. And it just puts you in that environment where there's other people working and you don't feel so lonely, even though you're not interacting with those people. I found that I could sit there and work for 6 hours straight really easily, where if I was at home and I had the refrigerator there, I could maybe only go for like an hour or two, and then I get distracted and I'd want to eat or do the laundry or do whatever. So it can be really helpful to find those spots. Good call on that.
Yeah, and those spots are great because you'll meet with, if you are in, you know, working around technology or even coaches or, you know, anything that is really digital, you'll actually build a very nice network. And second, these people might have been in the city for a long time, so they've gone through the same process of that, you know, first month in which you start learning about the area. So that's definitely a great, that's why I also go to, you know, digital nomad events, because everybody has gone through the same, you know, issues with where to stay and all that. And that's always nice. Now, however, that's also a risk because, as Cam was saying, a lot of these nomads hang out together all the time. And they're really not meeting locals. And in fact, they're always complaining that the locals, you know, the locals are not that friendly and blah, 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 blah. But that's all BS. It's just that they stay together. So Something to watch out.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Because if you're traveling with a group of nomads or with a group of foreigners, you know, locals aren't really going to want to interact with you. It's like if I'm in New York and I see a big group of Greek people, you know, I feel like they're doing their thing. They don't want to deal with me. You know, they've got their own little mini community here. But if you're just one person or you're with some locals, then that becomes normal.
It also depends on your approach. And there's always like a few nomads that are actually into games that, you know, I've come across a few times. And you'll just know because they, even though they might be into technology or whatever, they are cool. You can, they're laid back. You can tell that they're not nervous. Those are the guys that you want to build that connection with because then everything is so much simpler.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point. So when did you transition out of your, it was recently, or not recently, but like a year ago, right? Where, or last summer, when we went to Vegas, that's when you no longer had to go to Atlanta for once a week out of the month. Is that correct?
So what happened was that I was doing what I just told you about, you know, the Atlanta thing. But it came to a point in which I had to stop because I made the mistake of traveling, changing places too often. You know, I fell on that trap. And then at that point, you know, I had this girlfriend, whatever. I don't know. It was a time in my life in which I had to stop and take some time off to, you know, refocus and all that. So I did it. And total was like a year and 3 months, I think. And so I went to Spain, spent there around 4 months. My girlfriend broke up with me, and then that's kind of what started this, I guess, nomadic lifestyle, but completely insane. It was 100% going to places where I could practice, I could learn game and all that. So that's definitely a completely different mode. And in fact, go ahead.
What are you doing now?
So now I just came back to Austin from my sabbatical, and yeah, so just starting off here, I'm still with the same company. I'm not going to be able to pull the Atlanta thing. There's still something that I think I can do to keep myself from having to travel or even being, having to go to work every day. So I'm still working the details, but I'll probably transition out like sooner than later. That's kind of where I'm going, still going through the process. And that's something that we can talk about. Is, you know, after 3 years of not only meeting nomads everywhere, being one, but also training people to become one. That's kind of what I did during part of my sabbatical as a consultant, startup consultant. You know, I understand that there's a lot of people that get drawn to this because almost like a get rich scheme type of thing. You just do drop shipping, you just do affiliate marketing and all that. Those guys are super, super miserable because they're doing really just the drop shipping or affiliate marketing. If you're doing that with something that you really don't care about, it's like the most boring thing ever. I have this marketing guy. He's starting doing SEO just because he will be location independent, and he's absolutely miserable. So the dream is not to just be location independent, but actually do something that you care about, that it's interesting at least, or at least leverages your skill. I can be then leveraged forward into a new place, a new position, right? So that will be something I would totally warn against. First of all, it's not as easy. You're going to put a lot of hours to make it. And if you don't like it, you're going to hate it. You're just not going to go through. There's a lot of people that are just doing bullshit graphic design or, I don't know, managing Facebook accounts. That's, you're throwing your life away doing that just to be able to travel.
Right. Yeah. You know, I met so many people that all they want to do is travel, and that's fine. And you can make money. Like, you can live on fucking pennies. There's people living on $5 a day in Bali, having a great time. And even if you just teach English to locals, you can make pretty good money doing that in a lot of places in Southeast Asia. You can make like $25 an hour in some places, just teaching English, and you can teach a bunch of English to hot local girls and, you know, be the authority in the classroom and get a ton of dates that way. So you'd be surprised where,
yeah,
you can go,
exactly.
Just, you know, and so why do something else? Like, you know, why try to do the drop shipping and the Amazon bullshit or, like you said, the, you know, managing Facebook accounts? If you hate that stuff, that's just miserable. You're going to have way more fun interacting with people. And doing something that's social, like teaching English.
Yeah, it's all about your priorities. I mean, for example, my case, during my sabbatical, my priority at the beginning was to, you know, do the volunteering work, sure, test my skills. But during the second half, I was, no. My priority is to hit on girls as much as possible, everywhere, you know, and try to optimize for that. And, you know, if we sat down and whiteboard this, there's some things that make more sense to be able to boost that as opposed to some other priority you might have.
So on this sabbatical that you've had for the last, you know, 15 months, have you been working at all or just purely working on your social skills?
So that was a lot of work, by the way.
Yeah, of course.
I've been doing that, but during the first part, I was doing I volunteered helping entrepreneurs, digital nomads and all this. And I was still helping them all throughout, but the different, you know, not as intense. So at the same time, while I was doing that, I was trying to, you know, kind of frame my next business. You know, I asked in the group a couple of times about it. So definitely exploring different options, and I'm still doing that. So it was not only this traveling and hitting on chicks, which was probably like 80%. But that 20-30% was also trying to set myself for when I came back. I knew that I was not going to go back to the consulting Monday through Friday travel 80 hours a week. I mean, I knew that that was not sustainable. And by the way, you know, before, you know, I know I'm talking a lot, but actually there's something that happened during the second part of my sabbatical, which was that I actually burned out. After 31 days in Vegas and a weekend in Amsterdam, my body completely shut off. And so even if you are trying to go hardcore at this, you need to make sure you take care of your health. And that's something that is super understated in the digital nomad community. So it actually happened to me. I burned out, not doing 4 years, 5 years of crazy management consulting stuff, but during this rampage of just going out and back.
Yeah, that's actually that's really important. I'm glad you brought that up, because especially if you're going out every night and drinking and partying, you know, you can get out of hand really quickly. And that's happened to me as well. You know, you wake up, you're hungover, instead of cooking something or having something sensible, you know, you grab a slice of pizza or you grab a sandwich and you're just rinsing and repeating that process. And pretty soon you're going to be fat and sluggish and just feeling super unhealthy. You'll get sick. So it's really, really important, especially when traveling, to take care of your diet and exercise, because that's usually the first thing that goes. Most people, once they get in that travel mentality, they're like, oh, I want to try all the local food and, you know, oh, working out. No, I'm on vacation. Well, you're not on vacation. This isn't vacation anymore. This is your life. This is, you know, when you don't have that structure, that's when you need to really like batten down the hatches even more.
Yep, you hit on the nail there. You need more structure. Even if you are a creative type, you need some sort of boundaries. Otherwise, you know, it's very different, very easy for you to just overdo it. Because also, you are in a place where there are so many shiny objects around. And yeah, so discipline is very, very important on the road.
For sure. Awesome. Thanks, Joselito. It's really great advice from a very seasoned nomad. Anyone else on the call that either has questions about time management or wants to share their own experience about that?
Yeah. What's the best way to kind of get plugged into meeting some of these guys that he's talking about while you're not actually traveling, like preparing for it and being able to learn some stuff through networking?
Wait, sorry, I'm not fully understanding the question. What's the best way to meet who?
Well, I spend 2 or 3 months of the year on the road, but the rest of the time I'm at home. So Patrick and you know, he was talking about meeting these guys and, you know, and learning a lot of stuff from them.
Just locals, you mean, or other other nomads?
Other nomads. Because I'm kind of isolated, and I have to spend so many hours searching the internet and reading and reading and reading, and you know, you can learn so much more from other people that have figured out things that work.
Right. Well, Joselito, you know about these different nomad groups, right?
Yes. So here's what I would say. If you are going to travel to a particular city, look on Facebook. There's always a digital nomad, whatever, Budapest digital nomad. That's the first thing you do. You ask right. about accommodation, what's optimal, what are the best co-working spaces, even see if there's somebody that has rented a longer-term apartment and has some available rooms. That's the first thing right. I would do. Once I get there, make sure to hang out at the co-working spaces. I would just do co-working at least for a week. And also look up Meetup. There's always digital nomad meetups that happen. Great place to find folks. And also language exchange. It's also a great way to meet locals. As long as you know English, just show up there. There's going to be a bunch of locals, a bunch of girls, actually. And that's another way to get to know the place.
Okay, so I could do that actually where I live while I'm not traveling then.
Sure. Where do you live?
In Vancouver, Canada.
Yeah. Sure, do it.
Yeah.
I mean, in
yeah.
the summertime.
You could be the host. You could be more of the host for Digital Nomads.
Yeah. Okay. I'll do a little research then. I can dig up some groups and stuff.
There's another...
Yeah, keep in mind that the local... Oh, go ahead, Robbie.
No, you go first.
Well, just to keep in mind that you don't have to be a foreigner to be, you know, in the community. And there's a bunch of people that are locals, are into technology or whatever, a host of different topics. And they show up at these events. A lot of them, actually. You'll be surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I need to do more networking. I, like I say, I just go it alone a lot and, it's a lot slower learning process.
Yeah, that's got another great resource is there's a site called showaround.com. Okay. It's basically what you can do is you can browse locals in whatever city you are, and you can pay them a small fee, talking like $5 an hour, sometimes for free, and they'll show you around their city. And they'll introduce you to locals. They'll, you know, help you. Basically, it's like you're hiring a local personal assistant, but they're not really a personal assistant, right? They're there to kind of teach you about the culture and to get you acclimated with the city. You know, but mm-hmm. if you say, hey, I want to find the best shopping places and, you know, I want you to take me to get some Burning Man clothes made in Vietnam, you can do that. I did that when I was there. Sure. You know, he helped us find some local tailors and took us to where all the local sweatshops were, where they were making all the garments. And we went and negotiated with, the sellers there and bought a bunch of fabric, found a tailor, had the tailor make us a bunch of custom outfits for Burning Man, where we would have paid, you know, thousands of dollars for these costumes in Vietnam. They were like $100 after all of our work.
Right. Right.
And so showaround.com is a great tool, and you can also you can do the same thing. You could show people around your city or other cities you know as a local.
I remember looking at that a long time ago, but I couldn't remember the name of the website, so that's good. Thanks.
Sure. Other people with questions or comments?
My question right now is going to be general. So instead of asking what is the best, I guess I'm going to ask what your thought process is on going from, you know, your say 9 to 5 or to that nomadic lifestyle. Like there's so many options, right? Like one of the things I think seem to be stuck with is, should I do Airbnb or should I go a consulting route? While I'm in the long term trying to build this startup. So, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of options. I have a software engineering background, right? So it seems to me it would take a long time to get all the data or information, but even then I'm still dealing with uncertainty. So how did y'all figure it out?
So let me just clarify the question. How did I kind of transition out of the 9-to-5 when I had different options?
It seems like there's so many different options, right? Like, there's a Husalino was talking about, like, drop shipping and
right.
Do SEO, right? And then there's Airbnb, which seems to be a comfortable route for me. But, you know, to be honest, I'm not going to be that excited about doing it. Like, I think if I get about 9 properties, you know, I'm done. I'm not going anymore. That's to be enough to hold, especially if I can make everything as little work as possible so I can focus on getting my startup to product market fit as soon as possible.
Right. So, wait, did you say 9 properties?
Right. I'm thinking like I'm estimating 9 properties, and I could be off, but my guesstimate was from 4 to 9 properties.
Yeah, well, 4 properties is a full-time job. 9 properties is you're a full-fledged vacation rental business. you know, ask me how I know.
I'll ask you some like data on it while you're on it on the subject.
Well, wait, before we go into Airbnb too much.
How much time do you spend managing one property? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, before we go into Airbnb, basically 3 properties is like pretty much all you can do on the side. 1 property can be easy enough. 2, if they're in the same building, can be a nice little side gig. But once you're talking 3, especially if they're in different places or different cities, with all the fires and potentials that can go wrong, you know, that is a legitimate like 20 to 30 hours a week side gig with the potential for more. But it's going to average out to that. And once you hit 4, you're full time. Cause it's an exponential growth of time, when it comes to managing properties. So that's definitely not what I recommend. Property management is one of the worst jobs in the history of the world. Just ask any property manager and they'll tell you without even asking them, because they're probably miserable and either a dick or a cunt and hating their life, because who wants to deal with, you know, plumbing issues, people who are unhappy, hotel goers who, you know, they found a piece of lint on the bottom of the rug and now they're irate and they want a full refund. Like, it's only bad shit that can happen when you're managing a property. You never get the call, hey, I checked into this place and it's so awesome, you want to go out for dinner? That just doesn't happen. All you hear about is bad shit, right? So when it comes to Airbnb, I think that's a great place to start as, you know, creating a little bit of a side income, because you're leveraging your rent. And your rent is usually your biggest expense or your mortgage. And if you're going to travel, then you certainly don't want to be paying rent or mortgage at a place that's sitting empty. So you're kind of killing 2 birds with 1 stone. That's what's so awesome about Airbnb. Also, Turo is with your car. You don't want these things that are your biggest expenses sitting around not being utilized. You want to, you know, put that dead capital into action. But that's certainly not a side sort of job you want. Like, trying to manage Airbnb properties from Budapest when you're, you know, 9 hours ahead of LA is a fucking nightmare, because everyone's checking in at like 5 a.m. in the morning. And, that's not the time when you want to be dealing with headaches or cleaners not showing up or the typical things that suck about being an Airbnb host. So I'd recommend, you know, just your own place, or maybe your place plus a place in the same building, as far as that goes. Now, when I was, transitioning from my 9-to-5, into, you know, what I'm doing now, which is IC and doing this sort of thing, I had other options too. I was a really accomplished golfer and I could have been giving golf lessons. I was also betting a lot on golf. And I kind of had this side golf hustle going on. So I was making money doing that. I was also making money playing poker, which is a skill I developed, and I made a bunch of money in college playing poker. That was almost like a full-time job along with being a student. And, so I had these different options. I could be a pro poker player. I could be, you know, pursue professional golf or give lessons or just be a golf gambler. Or I could be a dating coach, or I could continue working in finance or get another job in sales. And, you know, none of those seem bad, right? Most people, given the opportunities, would take any of those options over their current job. But let me tell you, like, you know, being a professional poker player fucking sucks unless you absolutely love poker. And I used to love it, but once I got burned out, I was burned out. Same thing with golf. And I'm really glad I pursued IC because that was my passion at the time. And like Joselito said, doing anything that you don't love to do, you know, even if you're making good money, is miserable. You know, trying to be a drop shipper on Amazon, that can come with, you know, a ton of its own problems. And if you're not really, you know, into, you know, going to China and cutting great deals with local factories and making money that way, you know, if that's not your thing, you don't like to negotiate and you don't like to deal with those sorts of issues that arise, then that's probably not a great option for you. So it's really important to...
That's assuming that you are going to make money. Because not because you get into dropshipping, you are going to make money. That's the whole myth.
Totally.
You have to really put in the hours to start making money.
Exactly. Most people that do it never make money. They lose money. Yeah. And they lose a ton of time. And, you know, they're learning a skill that they hate. So, you know, you don't want to spend time learning something that you won't even eventually like to do. So, you know, at least with Airbnb, like I said, you're leveraging your rent, or with Turo, you're leveraging your vehicle. And then from there, you know, if you, Mark, I know your startup is your passion and it's in the nutrition space. And, you know, we've discussed before, you know, being more of a, someone who's consulting in the health and fitness field, at least that's going to give you some data in terms of helping you with your startup. It's going to probably open doors for people you can meet. At least you're kind of in that same industry, you know? Do you think that's, kind of the path that would fit you the best? We've spoken about that before.
As far as consult, well, I would, that will take some time. That would take at least, I'd say 4 to 6 months out before I could say in confidence and say, yeah, I'm a good health consultant.
Right? Yeah, but right, any of these things are going to take time, right? The Airbnb is going to take time. They're all going to take time. It's just a question of what do you want to put your time into?
Okay.
Unless you have something tomorrow that you could immediately go out and start making money doing because you have that skill. Time investment.
Yeah, that's the trade-off. I mean, like, I could consult on video game development, right? Or a lot of different software development, mobile app development. But
if you don't mind, if you can charge a high hourly rate doing that, and if you think you could more productively, you know, go to Eastern Europe or sit on a beach in Bali, spend a couple hours a day consulting and have that pay for your lifestyle and then maybe have your place Airbnb'd at home. I could see that being a successful strategy. And then you'd have, you know, 5 to 6 hours a day working on your startup with, you know, a few more hours devoted towards staying healthy and making sure your social life doesn't fall to shit.
Right. That would be interesting. I gotta see if I can speak to any other consultants that have been in the space, because it would be the first time I do this on my own. And the whole notion of me consulting a couple of hours a day, or, you know, like 10 hours a week, that's just, you know, usually when I think of consulting work, it's basically people wanting to hire me short term to architect or code a project. Right.
Yeah, I see. So it's a little bit more intensive.
If I'm coding, it's going to be, intensive. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Joselito, I muted you because there was some background noise, but unmute yourself at any point if you want to chime in. That's the thing I kind of wanted to touch on, is there's kind of this myth where, I can do these three things or even these two things and be successful. But let me tell you, even doing two things is tough. Right, just running IC and doing Airbnb, or just running IC, and I don't even really
deal with Airbnb anymore because we have SenseDay that deals with all that. Like, I don't manage any places personally these days. And for the last 2 years, I was only managing one place. But I do manage my two vehicles. And just that plus IC is really fucking time consuming. So, you know, really ideally, you want to get down to one thing that you love, that you're really good at. You want to spend every waking hour when it comes to work doing that one thing, and you'll be the most successful. Because whenever you have to divide your time into different tasks, you know, you're getting a, you're missing out on exponential growth, right? The growth between 8 hours on IC versus 6 hours and 2 hours on IC and Turo, you know, those extra 2 hours, you know, it's not just an extra, it's not eight versus six. It's more like, you know, I probably get like double the output. It's more like 16 versus six if I have that extra time that's uninterrupted. Don't quote me on those math numbers, but you get the point.
Well, yeah, I get it. The context switching is huge. Yeah.
Yeah. So you want to work towards that, and you want to make sure that your side hustle, even though it may be profitable and lucrative, you don't want it to overtake your main thing that you're working towards, which is your startup and your passion.
Exactly. And so that's the dilemma, right? That's the main thing that's made like tech consulting for me very unattractive, because, you know, if I spend even four hours coding, right, and especially if it's on someone else's project and not mine, I'm going to be spent. Like, yeah. If I really focus, right, like, I'm going to be spent.
Yep.
That means nothing, like, there's nothing else for me to do on my startup a day. I'll be going to a call. So,
yes, you have to be
that was my hope of doing the Airbnb. But, you know, that's why I'm asking you, is like, you were talking about SenseDay. Is it possible to get to a point where I'm not managing at all? Like, I have someone else managing it for me, and I take maybe, I give them 30% of the profit.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, if you're going to farm out the management, they're going to take a huge cut of the profits, and it may no longer be a viable option for you. So, you know, but ideally, it's not that tough to just do your own place, which means you're getting paid. You're not paying rent or mortgage. Instead, you're getting paid, which should pay wherever you are locally for lodging. If you go somewhere cheap, right, where lodging is a third or fourth of the prices in the U.S., then not only does that cover your lodging, that covers all of your expenses. Like, when I was in Eastern Europe during 2015, I had my little three-bedroom on Larrabee Street in L.A. My rent was $3,500, and I was making $9,000 a month, and I was managing it all on my own. So that was, you know, $5,500 a month of disposable income with almost no time. You know, I might have spent 5 hours on it a week, but that paid for everything. And the rest of my time was going straight to IC, and that was a really effective time for me because of that. Unfortunately, I had to give the place up because, you know, the landlords caught me. Fucking sucked, but that was like the best sort of side hustle I could ever imagine, where you're just, you know, $5,500 a month of disposable income living in Ukraine. You're living like a fucking king. And that wasn't even my main income. And I got to spend all the time I wanted on my main income. So you can imagine, you know, what my life was like.
I hear you.
I mean, you have an advantage because you are in IT. So, I mean, there's so many ways to make money if you have that skill set. And you don't need to, I mean, I know that there's some gigs that are going to be more like, you know, just being a subcontractor, but you can also charge for your time and at a premium. And you just, it's really like more of the consulting, but not as in, you know, executing, doing part of the work, but for more of an advisory role. So there are sites that you would just be, you just list yourself, your services, your hourly rate, and they will book you, right? And of course, you start just being free, not charging anything. And once you have like 10 testimonials, then you start jacking up the price. You're not going to have that many people booking you, but it's still like pretty good money, right? If you get to $100 an hour. But you also need to understand that you said that you're starting a startup, and that should be 90% of your focus. So I don't know if it's more of building a side hustle rather than trying to downsize and, you know, leave very, very cheap while you started. You know, starting a business should be 99% of your time.
Agreed.
Yeah, it should be, but I don't have much cash. Like, I've got to make something.
No, you know, sure. What I'm saying is that you can make cash, but try to make cash leveraging your skill set, not starting to do Airbnb. Do it if you have your home, as Robbie said, but just don't get into something that you don't have the skill.
Yeah.
Right? Gotcha. Leverage your
skill. I agree with that. Try not to spread yourself thin on something new. Like, I got into the whole Airbnb thing in New York, and I hated it, to be honest with you. I hated being on a lease. I hated having to worry about what the property was. I would get calls from management that something was broken and I have to deal with it while I'm at my office every day. Unless you want to invest a lot of time in Airbnb or have Sensei manage it for you, I don't recommend doing it. So I know that kind of goes against what you're saying, Robbie. I would do it if it was my own place with a second bedroom. But if I want to do it like full time, it wasn't worth it for me. And it was caused more stress in my life than I wanted.
Yeah, you know, it depends on the place. It depends on the property. New York can be a huge headache. Just, you know, with the weird times people are checking in, with the neighbors on top of each other. You know, my place that I was talking about in LA was pretty easy. It was a 3-bedroom house, detached, didn't really have any neighbor issues. They could show up, get the key out of the lockbox, you know, leave, and I had my cleaner handle everything. So, you know, different places, call for a lot more time investment. So keep that in mind. Good point.
Yeah, different. Like, New York is definitely way tougher than LA. So I agree with you there. So, but
and the returns are much harder, though. The returns in New York are 4x the returns of LA. In fact, LA isn't even a market that's profitable anymore for Airbnb. I can't say that. There's some profitable sorts of situations, but you know, my 3-bedroom, when I gave it up, it was basically making nothing. It was breaking even because LA is just the nut low for Airbnb these days.
New York's getting tougher, right? Well, with all the laws and regulations they're putting in.
Yes and no. It's getting tougher in terms of that, but you're making more money because there's less demand or less supply.
Okay.
Well, I'm looking at Orlando, and I'm doing this with my brother. And some of the properties I'm looking at 3x.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you're talking about like Sensei, like, you know, this, the money we spend, the money and time we invest, I estimate about 2 weeks, and I may be off on this. You can tell me how long it took you to find a property, but you know, and I sent you that link, Robbie, about that Udemy program.
Yeah, I saw that. I don't know about Orlando. I have no idea. So that's not a market I'm familiar with, but
I use EverBook to see do comps on the market, and it seems to be pretty healthy around the theme park corridor.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it.
Was it about like 10, like for a 3-2, they're making about 10,000 profit annually. So, roughly speaking. So, anyway, and I've got some estimates on like, you know, the amount of time on just one article. And bottom line, I do intend to, like, you know, I guess you could say contract out as much of the work as possible. So,
well, like I said,
I guess it really comes down to
anything,
the numbers. Would it be, you know, would it turn? Could I basically turn it into something passive income? Right. That's what I'm wondering. Is it actually possible to do that? Like, if I contract out enough of this.
Can I ask you a question? This is who's talking here, real quick. Sorry,
Mark.
That's Mark from Orlando. Mark.
Hey, how's it going? So you're a software engineer. That's what you said, right?
Yeah.
So I'm a software engineer too. One of the way, like, I think if you wanted to, I don't know what you're trying to do with your startup. I got on the call late. I was on the subway. But trying to build your own software and sell it like on the App Store, I think is going to be your best bet. Go to like Bali, into a really cheap place, build an application that solves a problem, build it up into a company versus trying to do consulting at the same time. I should follow my own advice as well.
And you say you consider doing consulting at the same time?
Well, so what I'm doing right now is I'm trying to build my own software application that I plan to release on the Apple Mac store. And I believe it will sell and make money there. I am consulting in the meantime to pay the rent and everything like that. So I have some software consulting. Luckily, all the consulting things I'm doing, though, kind of tie together. So I'm doing the same kind of thing for my consulting work that I'm doing for the thing I'm building myself. So what I'm learning in one place will apply to the other one. But you really want to get to the point, you can't. Airbnb is always going to take some type of management. If you're managing other developers, it's always going to take some type of management. So if you have something you can sell that makes money passively, that's really what you're gonna start making money on. So my goal in the next 6 months is to have an application on the App Store that I can sell.
Okay.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it.
How long have you been in development? I'm reading that the average startup in the U.S. takes 21 months to reach $1 million in revenue. Right.
So,
and then there's the MVP. You take what, 6 months? So 3 to 6 months if you already have a clear idea. So what's that looking like for you?
I mean, I'm definitely, so like Robbie said, and I need to work on getting down to doing one thing. I'm spread way too thin right now, which is why I'm not doing super successful at any one thing. And I need to focus more. I need to start cutting things out. And the way I need to start cutting things out is I can get one client that's going to pay me basically enough to live in, say, Bali or Eastern Europe. And then I can focus the rest of my time on doing the stuff that I'm going to sell. So
I've got a theory. I want to run it by you guys. Tell me what you think. I just kind of dawned on me. I was thinking about your background in coding, and now you're very informed when it comes to photography and videography and editing. And you know, ultimately, we saw that the convergence of those two skills could lead to a hugely successful product.
Mm-hmm.
Another guy that I actually partied with in Ukraine was a dude who's worth millions and millions and millions of dollars, who was formerly, he was a Club Med DJ, one of the first DJs for Club Med. And he was always upset because, you know, he'd be DJing at these parties, and the girls would all give him attention, but they'd all go home and they'd fuck the French tennis pros. And he was like, fuck these French tennis pros, these cocksuckers. Like, why am I not getting the pussy? So he realized that while he was DJing, he had to be behind the turntables while these French guys were hitting on all of his girls. So he invented, I think it's the CDR maybe that he invented, or not the CDR, but whatever, basically that CD thing that DJs have where they just plug it in, they play a set. He invented that, and now he's worth a gazillion dollars. And so it was the convergence of his knowledge as a DJ plus coding that allowed him to solve this problem that every DJ in the world has, and that's why he now has a 20,000 square foot flat above the Capitol building in Kiev. And he's got he's installing one of those indoor skydiving things in his living room. So it dawned on me, maybe if I ever want to make it really, really rich in the dating space, I need to learn how to code. Then I can come up with some app that, you know, teaches guys how to text or how to become a boss. You know, follow this little 90-day app and you'll go from masturbating every day to banging, you know, a model every week and finding your dream girl after that. you know, but I need to learn how to code, because if I pay Patrick or Cameron to do it, then they're going to take all my money. So that's my theory. What do you guys think?
So I want to go two things into this. First off, you are completely right about the two things colliding. The application that I'm currently building is to manage all this media and content that I'm creating on my photography and videography side. And it's going to be applied not only to my personal thing, but you guys, I think anybody that has an iPhone would be interested in it. Anybody that's in Hollywood would be interested in it. And also the market I was previously in, which was military space, is going to be interested in it. So me focusing on my photography for a while and building that skill set drove me to want to build something that solved my own problem. Right. So that's what I'm doing right now. Now I'm not making any money at it until I start selling it. So that's why I still have to do consulting, which is why I'm spread thin and that's annoying. But I can go into that later. As for the other thing that you talked about, well, I have a couple ideas. Maybe we just do a retreat where we do a hackathon and we build an app for you, and you host us, and we all come up with ideas all together and do that. I don't know. All the guys in the group, you host them for a week, give us free coaching, and we build you an app.
Yeah, it's an idea, but the problem is if I were to build an app for myself, I would need to be tinkering it and tweaking it so much that, yeah, you know, I'd be giving away a lion's share of my company to a developer, and right, and I'd be at their, you know, they'd have me by the balls basically, and I know how that goes.
No, get a co-founder.
Yeah, basically what you should do is spin off a separate company, and and a co-founder build that app together, and that will drive them to want to build it, and then you can just tell them what to do.
Right. All right. That's one way to do it.
Patrick?
By the way, Robbie, what you're talking about, there's a fun little phrase out there I'm sure you'll appreciate. It's called when ideas have sex, right? Like merging ideas together, right? So
right.
That's the concept there. And the good news about learning to code is you can really learn a lot of the basics within 6 months.
Okay.
But, you know, from personal experience, like I come up with ideas all the time. And it's just because I'm just learning things all the time. It's not because I know how to code. I've been learning all different types of technology. And I'm thinking, how can this fit with what I'm doing here? How can I fit with this problem here? And the other part is just being really interested in people's problems, right? So I've gone from creating this, designing this app that was originally designed to solve a problem I was very frustrated with. And I've been talking to dozens of people about the problems they deal with, right? And I'm just super excited about where this will ultimately go.
Right.
I'll show that in a couple of weeks.
I will tell you it's not impossible, Robbie or anybody else. I have a friend, she was doing something completely different, and she wanted to create her own dating app. And she actually did it. It wasn't very good. I told her to reiterate, and she changed it into something that she's actually getting an app store soon. But she went from knowing no coding to actually having something in the app store, which even surpasses me. I don't have anything in the app store yet. So,
well, how'd she learn?
She went on the line and learned through like the Swift tutorials, and there's enough online tools, video courses, and ebooks available pretty much for free. It just takes you wanting to sit down and actually do it is the main thing.
Right. All right.
And if you do want to do that, or if anybody else wants to do that, I'm willing to tell you what resources you need to find and do it to make it happen. I can definitely provide that to anybody about what you should learn and where you should go, teaching you also version control to help you manage your software. So anybody wants to know any of that stuff, reach out to me. But it really takes you wanting to do it is the main thing.
Okay. I'm gonna post right now. Patrick, please list out the steps to learn code, as you mentioned on the call. Cool. Well, listen, guys, I got to jump off because it's dinner time. But if anyone wants to stay on and chit chat more, feel free.
Sounds good.
Yeah, and lots of good shit on this call. Thanks for being on. Like I said, I'm going to hang up now.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.